Welcome to the Inner Side radio program. And regular listeners to this program know that January is traditionally dedicated to laughing at the previous year, which can take all month. I'd like to kick off this January rebroadcasting material from Harry Shearer's Year in Rebuke. I don't even know where to start talking about who is Harry Shearer, but most people know him from his current day job at The Simpsons, where he voices many of the central characters. And as day jobs go, that is excellent. Besides The Simpsons, filmmaking, writing novels, and outspoken investigative journalism on the man-made disaster surrounding Hurricane Katrina, Harry Shearer also happens to be a member of an elite class of extraordinary citizens. He's a volunteer radio programmer at a public radio station. He produces a weekly program from KCRW in Southern California called Le Show, which is not broadcast here in Houston, which is why I'm sharing. Harry has been the gold standard of political radio satire over the 28 years that Le Show has been on the air. I had a recent conversation with a gentleman by the name of Paul Krasner, whom we're hoping to have on the radio program soon. Paul Krasner co-wrote Lenny Bruce's autobiography, How to Talk Dirty and Influence People, in 1965. Krasner was a longtime associate of Lenny Bruce, and when asked if there was a contemporary descendant of Lenny, he named Harry Shearer, who writes his own stuff and voices all his own characters, much as Lenny Bruce did in his stand-up. From Le Show, The Year in Rebuke, check out Harry Shearer.
Ladies and gentlemen, this week, Reverend Pat Robertson, still Reverend of this 700 Club, came out against the severity of criminal sentences for marijuana users, saying that it was ruining young people. His television network then had to sort of walk back the cat with an announcement that Dr. Robertson did not call for the decriminalization of marijuana. He was advocating that our government revisit the severity of existing laws. Dr. Robertson is unequivocally against the decriminalization of marijuana. He had another statement earlier this year to explain his statement that the devastating earthquake in Haiti might have been caused by that island's longtime pact with the devil.
700 Club, Robertson.
Pat, good work.
Well, thank you, but who's this? I didn't get a thing from my assistant with your name.
So. That's strange. I did give my name. It's Mr. Zebub.
Mr. Zebub.
Mm-hmm.
It does ring a bell.
First name might help.
Huh?
Beale.
Oh, well, of course. Silly me, I didn't recognize your voice, your lordship. Well, in fairness, Mr. Zebub, I do hear a lot of voices in the course of a day.
Of course you do. That's part of our deal. You get worldwide television exposure on a daily basis, and in return, you have to hear all the voices I put in your head, purely for my own amusement.
Well, I got the deal on paper right here in the drawer. I don't need to...
to be reminded of its terms. No, of course you don't. It's as good as the paper it once was written on.
Well, I'm honored as always by the call, but I do have more disaster victims to blame for their fate, so...
So why am I calling? You dare to ask me, the Lord of the Dark Side, why I might be calling you?
Well, I know it may seem a little presumptuous, but...
No. The new policy of full transparency. So happy to get to the point. Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Patman. Dude. I'd call you Reverend, but in the circumstances it seems excessively ironic.
Yes, sir.
I very much appreciate you connecting the disaster in Haiti with the little agreement I negotiated with the Haitian people 2 centuries ago.
Well, I just thought it helped to fulfill the publicity part of our agreement.
Oh, it did.
Good.
It's just that, and I don't know how to say this, your old devil's not that good at the humility bit. But the earthquake in Haiti really was none of my doing at all.
Really?
Wish I could take credit for it, but I had my hands full all week with the Conan and Jay thing at NBC. This was all the other guy's work.
Well, I've already had my office issue kind of a modified, limited explanation of my statement, you know, just to stop the donations from completely drying up. But you don't want me to issue a full retraction, do you? I mean, that could damage both our brands.
No, you're right. Not necessary. Mm-hmm. Just FYI. Mm-hmm. Need to know that okay. sort of thing.
Gotcha.
Oh, that and just a friendly reminder that your rent on Regent University is due on the 15th, promptly. Hate to see a lovely Christian law school suffer a devastating fire.
Oh, absolutely. No, you know, just some office problems. We'll get it right out. And thanks for being so understanding.
Hey.
Yeah?
It's my job. It really isn't, but I'd like to say that. You take care, Pat.
You too, Mr. Zubub, sir.
Hello, America. I'm Glenn Beck. You know, I'm just like you. I mean, yes, I'm a multimillionaire recovering alcoholic celebrity, but like you, I used to read lots of books. And afterward, I'd realize something. For maybe 10 hours of reading, I'd end up with 5 minutes worth of useful information. Not so smart, huh? That was my problem until one day I met a brilliant inventor businessman, Strom Philpott, who introduced me to the greatest advance in reading comprehension since... Ooh, I don't really know another advance in reading comprehension like this. I guess that's because I'm stupid. Or maybe it's because this one is the magic blackboard. Sure, you've seen it on my show, because ever since I discovered it, I can't live or speak without it. Now, I'm no scientist, but neither is Strom Philpott. Here's how the Magic Blackboard works. It uses sophisticated text precognition software to boil down any piece of writing to its simple, gut-grabbing essence. So, before you go to bed at night, you attach the patent-pending scanning device to the spine of the book you wanted to read. Don't worry, the more complicated the book, the more magic the Magic Blackboard has. The scanner connects with a standard USB cable into your Magic Blackboard. You call it a night. When you wake up next morning, the entire thrust of the book has been boiled down to easy-to-understand lines and shapes with a few keywords to get you going. And presto, you're a regular Dr. Gene Scott. Now, let me be entirely honest with you. If this technology was displayed on sophisticated digital screens, it would probably cost thousands of dollars. But because it uses a silly, old, low-tech blackboard, I promise you it'll set you back less than an autographed copy of my latest book. That's right. The blackboard you see me use every night on TV can now be yours. Now, I'm not saying it'll make you a multimillionaire TV celebrity. But then again, hey, I did used to be just like you. Come on, America. Follow me to the rest of the pitch.
The Glenn Beck Magic Blackboard can be yours for just 3 payments of $19.99 for the first payment. And $39.99 for the next 2 payments, except for the third. Specify blackboard or greenboard when you order. But hurry, this special TV offer can't last forever. When this shipment of Glenn Beck Magic Blackboards is exhausted, there won't be any more till the next shipment. So order now. Call the number on your screen. Or if you've got no screen, call the number on your radio. But call now.
Goodbye, America. I'm going to go stare at my Magic Blackboard. I really hope I see you there.
Things proceeded apace in the area which we were now no longer supposed to call AFPAC this past year. Although there was a slight interruption when General Stanley McChrystal felt free enough to speak openly about his disdain for other government officials and government policy to a journalist from Rolling Stone, because, you know, that's what a commanding general does in a war, is talk openly to a guy from Rolling Stone and then complain about it. Soon after that, he was called on the carpet, and the carpet was located in the Oval Office.
The President will see you now, sir. Hello, General McChrystal.
Mr. President, have you been working out? My God, I run 4 miles a day. I thought I was fit.
Well, I have been able to play a few rounds of golf lately.
And I don't want to alarm you, sir, but isn't that Miss America walking through the hallway? Such charm, such poise. But does the Secret Service know about this? You know you can never be too safe, sir, in this time.
That was my wife heading back to the East Wing. Sit down, General.
Thank you, sir. But are you sure that wasn't Miss America? I mean, she had such youthful warmth, such...
General, we're here to talk about you.
Of course, sir. And speaking just for myself, I just have to say, I've never seen the Oval Office looking more perfectly oval. Bravo, sir. Well done.
Thanks. Now, General, there's this little matter of the interview in Rolling Stone. I'm sure you were tired after a long war.
Yes, sir.
But there... Well, these kinds of comments seem to represent an ingrained disrespect for the civilian part of your chain of command. That's a serious matter.
Of course it would be, sir, but the staff and I thought it reflected the sort of camaraderie, the joie de guerre, if you will, of our relationship, as a matter of fact. Was it Dave Petraeus himself who said it? I can't remember. I've been so busy harvesting people. But someone said he thought it showed a sign of deep maturity that you could take that kind of good-natured ribbing and just keep on leading us into the future,
General,
a future bright with the promise of little children playing with butterflies.
General, nobody thought it came across as good-natured ribbing. It was resentful, dismissive, and contemptuous.
Oh, I'm sure you're right, sir, and yet I can't help being reminded right now, sitting here with you and Miss America, the First Lady, of how resentful and dismissive and what was the other...
Contemptuous.
Right, the ribbing that Abbott used to give to Costello, and yet I don't know about you, sir, but underneath it I always felt the deep respect that Bud had for...
General, the media don't seem to view it as playful or fun or reflecting any kind of respect. So let's take their word for it, shall we?
Yes, sir, Mr. President, of course.
Good.
Sir, although I have to say, I always told my men when the media were depicting you in the middle of the healthcare fight as weak and vacillating, I said, no, men, don't cave into the natural human tendency to believe what the media says. Mm-hmm. They're sensationalizing our strong, determined, resolute president just to sell papers and get ratings. But yes, sir, I'll stand corrected on the media, sir. After all, it really is like the old Smuckers thing, isn't it, sir?
The Smuckers thing?
Yes, sir. With a name like Wolf Blitzer, you have to tell the truth.
All right, fine. So, now the question before us. What do I do about this situation? What action do I take? Well, now, on the one hand...
Sir, if I may, I've taken the liberty of outlining several alternative courses of action you could choose from. These are just some strategic possibilities my staff and I worked up over the weekend on the new iPad CENTCOM just sent us, sir, which, by the way, I know sometimes military procurement can be a pain in the A double snakes, but if we'd had the iPad at HQ 7 years ago, we'd be out of Afghanistan long...
All right, General, let's hear your suggested courses of action.
Thank you, sir. And these aren't written in stone, of course, sir. Your people can tweak them and, you know, whatever...
Let's just hear them, please. We just have 20 minutes.
First, a complete and final banning of all reporters from the headquarters area of the war effort, which...
Which is totally impractical.
Oh, I was just going to say exactly those words, sir, but... I was outquick by my commander-in-chief. But a complete and final ban on all reporters from Rolling Stone, sir. Now you've really put your finger on the problem and you've squashed it like so many unfortunate civilians, sir.
General,
yes,
Rolling
sir.
Stone has done their hit piece. They're not coming back.
Yes, sir.
What else?
Well, you could put me on, and I hesitate to say these words, sir, because you know how single-mindedly I'm dedicated to warfighting, sir, but you could put me on temporary leave, send me to Pearl Harbor or CENTCOM headquarters in Tampa, totally out of the action, totally removed from
someplace quiet and sunny.
Sir, is that what you think? You think my staff and I are suggesting you give me a paid vacation on the backs of the hardworking Americans who play by the rules? All right, sir, you're right. I agree. Send me off for 2 weeks in Nome. Why didn't I think of that? What's the matter with me? Bad general. Bad general.
General, we're not sending you off to Nome.
Yes, sir. I agree. Too soft. Ketchikan, sir? I could build it there with an old army buddy, Doug Dimmeldorf. Runs a salmon boning facility up there, sir. Very Spartan. Really do me good. Might teach me a lesson, sir.
You're not going to billet with Doug Dimmeldorf, General.
No, sir.
You're going to be removed from your post. It would be an unmistakable signal of weakness on my part to leave you in charge. We know that. The polls tell us that.
Yes, sir. I'm sure the men can carry on without me. Mm-hmm. Best thing for them, really. Mm-hmm. Try to conduct a sophisticated counterinsurgency operation on their own, because really, you know, at some point you really do have to take the training wheels off the bicycle, don't you, sir? You know, let the kids take a crack at it. What do we have to lose, really?
And you'll be replaced by General Petraeus.
Dave! Mm-hmm. Good choice, sir. Get him back in the field before he gets any more cobwebs from that desk job, sir. Of course, he'll need me for a few months to get him up to...
General, you're dismissed from your post as of now. That is all.
Yes, sir. Spoken like a true commander, sir. I give you that. All right, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, sir, it was my pleasure to kill myself for my country just to be thrown away like an old snot rag, sir.
No.
Oh, look, Miss America is still there, sir. Maybe you should ask her what she would...
Goodbye, General.
You're listening to Selections from the Year in Rebuke, originally broadcast on Harry Shearer's Le Show radio program.
The economy is tanking. The dollar is drowning. Stocks don't make me laugh. And by the way, I never laugh. I'm G. Gordon Liddy. And if you're as scared about the future as I am trying to make you, you know you can't trust your security to stocks or insurance or even precious metal. You have basic needs. And sure, you've probably already got a good stock of food and water. But what about air? Without it, breathing is virtually impossible. Yet, if you're like most people, you've probably assumed it would always be there. That's how I thought until 10 years ago, when I met the people at Crossland Oxygen, America's leading suppliers of fine investment-grade breathable air for home and family. Maybe you think you can't afford to keep a well-maintained 2-month supply of pure, breathable air at or near your home. But think about this. You can't afford not to. Crossland Oxygen obtains the finest oxygen and nitrogen on the market, blends them according to their own proprietary formula for maximum blood support, and then seals it in titanium tanks that make a great addition to any den or basement. Sure, other companies are rushing into the emergency breathable air business, but you can trust Crossland. After all, that's where I buy my breathable air. Don't leave your respiration to chance. That's the sound of breathing, no matter what happens. That's the sound of Crossland Oxygen.
And early this year, former Vice President Dick Cheney was sort of a one-man attack squad going up against the policies, particularly the foreign policy, of President Obama. It was a performance that was cut short, at least for the moment, by Cheney's more recent recurrence of heart trouble. But earlier in the year, it appeared, at least to him, that he stood alone against the new president.
2010, the year in rebuke.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney,
confidential.
Who was it that said nothing focuses the mind like a fifth heart attack? Maybe it was Larry King. Maybe it was me. I probably wasn't paying attention. No doubt, as at the time of the Vietnam War, I had other priorities. But lying in that hospital bed, medicated up to my eyeballs, I had dreams. Awful dreams. Dreams of dying. Not real death, mind you. Just my speech going over poorly at the Conservative Political Action Committee conference. Although, in point of fact, I hadn't died there. I'd killed. Even had them chanting, "Run, Dick, run." Yet, there I was, leaving the hospital. Lucky I could even walk, Dick, walk. Funny how, just when you're ready to swing for the fences, life throws you curveballs. Maybe the guy said nothing focuses your mind like swinging too hard at curveballs. In any case, there I am in the secure, undisclosed den, laid out flatter than a dead buck on a Cherokee's roof rack, enjoying some of Lynn's fine, nurturing foodstuffs. Lynn's the only woman whose kitchen skills improved after getting cooking tips from the Navy. And I'll admit it, all they could think of is, I'm out there all alone, defending the two-fisted policies that we put in place, while my erstwhile colleagues were about to gather for a reunion dinner to compare the size of their book deals. I didn't know whether they were playing me for a neocon sap, but I didn't intend to lie there just waiting to find out. My former constituent in chief, the fellow who cleverly let me pick myself as his supposed deputy, was in town for the reunion. I sent word that I was too sick to go to the party, but just well enough to see him on my turf. As I expected, he bought it as eagerly as fresh intel from Ahmed Chalabi. He was coming over for coffee, but he was about to get creamed. Wednesday, 3:17 p.m.
So, Chainster, like I said in the photo op, looking good there, buddy.
Yeah, could be worse, Mr. President.
Sure could. Could be your sixth heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Guess I shouldn't joke about heart attacks so soon after, you know, the thing.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it, sir. The only thing that really upsets my cardiovascular apple cart is stress.
Well, heck, Chainster, you're out of office. If my experience is anything to go under, stress ended January 20th last year.
Mm-hmm.
Cute story. I'm writing about that very day right now for my book. Mm-hmm. You know, my ghostwriter and I are talking about how nice the French ambassador was to me the day I left office. Mm-hmm. And I said to my writer, I said, you know, the trouble with the French is they don't have a word for memoir. And he said, you know, Mr. President, I think they do.
You know, Mr. President, it's been only a year, and I forget. How do you like your coffee?
Boiling hot. I guess I shouldn't joke about coffee so soon after.
You know, I'm sure you understand how stressful it's been taking all the flack when I go out on television or into the print media to promote the robust approach to defending this country that you so wisely bought into.
Well,
I mean, put yourself in my shoes. You look around and you realize, hey, I am the only guy in this foxhole.
Well, sir, out in West Texas, the only guys in foxholes are foxes.
Not to diminish the perspicacity of your response, Mr. President, I happen to be referring to the military type of foxhole.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Sir Dick. I wouldn't know anything about that, and now that I mention it, neither would you. Mm. But, see, I just felt as though to where if you could sell that policy to me, see, you were the fella to sell it to the American people, especially through the rear-view mirror hindsight-type deal. Sure am looking forward to, speaking of that, to seeing old John Bolton at the reunion. I have a bet with Laura that his mustache is even bigger now that he's out of...
Sorry to interrupt your gripping rodomontade, sir, but I got a train to catch, so I thought an enhanced persuasion technique might be appropriate. There you go.
Oh, geez, Dick. I had no idea you were strong enough to waterboard somebody single-handed.
Well, sir, after 5 heart attacks, you figure out the steroid dosage it takes to rouse me. Now, sir, about me being out there all alone.
Well, now, Chainster, you're not alone. Good old John Hughes giving interviews like he's on a damn book tour.
He is on a book tour. Hmm. And B, he's trying to keep his chiny hiney from being prosecuted.
I see. Unlike, who exactly?
Sir, let's recall, I was just your vice president.
Yeah, well, that's one thing nobody's gonna...
Just a few moments to drink in the implications. There we go.
Damn. You're like Sammy Sosa on steroids on steroids. Now, look, Dick, I'm sorry, but I just can't join you in this little crusade. I got a book to write. Or at least I got a book to watch while it's being written.
Mr. President, I've got a book to write. Hell, everybody at that reunion except the waiters has got one. Mm. I'm going to need you to step up to the plate on this particular account. And I've got a wet washcloth and a steroid-enhanced arm that says you're going to do precisely that. Otherwise, if you're inclined to go French on me...
No, that's okay. It's all the same to you. I'd rather not go through that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing about the French is they don't even have a word for deja vu. So what do you need? Is it something maybe Jeb can do?
I'm going to need you to do a discreet number of interviews endorsing my leadership of the Obama defacement program. You know, amazingly enough, sir, you still have a great reservoir of goodwill among some of the American people. Just a simple endorsement of my enhanced opposition techniques could be profoundly helpful.
Chainster, you drive a hard bargain.
No bargain involved, sir.
No coffee either, apparently.
Yeah. Funny thing about the coffee. Hated to go all noir on my former constituent in chief. But that's the thing about the French. They don't even have a word for noir. And a partial diary for late February 2010. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential. Confidential.
One thing all kids love is Gloop. So why take them on a road trip to a vacation paradise that's got no Gloop? When you can take them to BP Attraction's hottest new destination, Tar Beachopolis. It's beach fun like you've never had it before.
Mom, this fur's like me petted. Ooh, gloopy.
How's the water, kids?
Mommy.
It's sunshine, sea breeze, and plenty of gloop.
Hey, dude, I'm surfing on sand. Way gloopy.
So fill up the car, pack the whole family in, and take them on a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Because Tar Beachopolis has to close when the gloop goes. Tar Beachopolis, Florida's new play place, where the fun never slops.
Gloop may contain toluene, benzene, and other volatile compounds. Do not inhale. Ventilator sold separately.
This has been The Inner Side, a leisure service of the Pacifica Foundation in Houston, Texas, from KPFT. Featuring Harry Shearer from his weekly broadcast, Les Show, out of KCRW in Southern California. Drop me a line with questions, comments, or death threats at scooterkpft@yahoo.com. This and all previous 300 Inner Side radio programs are archived in air quality, downloadable MP3 McNuggets at my secret website hidden on the intertubally Google. Simply type in The Inner Side. Hopefully this year is better than your last, and may your last come sooner than later. My name is Scooter. See y'all next week.
Doggone if you ain't a pretty little thing. I've been doggone, you ain't sweet as the breath of spring. If I ever found out you're no good running around in the neighborhood, I wouldn't be doggone. I've been long.